Welcome to the second series of The Road to Online Retail. In the first series, we focused on the second age of online retail and how, in this second age, it's even more important than ever before to stand out from the crowd. In this series, we're going to continue that deep dive with international retail marketing and sales expert, Kevin Moore. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you very much, Nige.
Now, we started this podcast 2 years ago, pretty much, when COVID first kicked in, and COVID was having a dramatic effect on retail at that point. What's changed over this two-year period?
So important is having a dramatic effect. When we use the word drama, it's in the negatives. And a dramatic positive effect on retail and a dramatic negative effect on retail, depending on how prepared you were as a leader and how open-minded you were as a leadership team or as a business owner to embrace the accelerated change, the accelerated acceptance of all things online by shoppers. So there are a lot of positives, a huge number of positives that have come out of this, and some of the negatives. We talked about the fact that early in this that a lot of stores wouldn't make it, and a lot of stores haven't made it. They've gone. They're not here. And the stores that remain are smaller, more focused, and have a much, much wider online offering to be successful. So there were a lot of good things that have come out of this. It wasn't just a bad thing.
And in the world of online, for online retailers, what's changed for them in this period of time?
Let's sort of talk about retail. So I think the key thing about, you know, the beginning of 2020 and the beginning of 2022 is in that time, it's all retail.
Yeah, yeah.
So we used to have this thing, you have physical retailers and bricks and mortars, and then there's online. It's all retail. And we've seen this because the behaviors of physical retailers who have gone out and acquired online portals and businesses to accelerate their position because they bought shoppers who are comfortable and trusting of those domains. And we've seen it because online retailers have bought defunct brands that have gone under that were retail brands that people trusted. They walked into their stores and they loved them. So it's now just come to this point where when we're talking retail, it is retail. If I'm a shopper, I wish to shop with you, your brands, the products you offer, and I wish to shop wherever I choose to be. I want to go to a store, and I will tell you some great stories about just how powerful physical remains when done properly. But I want to go to your physical stores when I choose to, when it suits me, and I also want to shop online with you when I choose to, when it suits me, and I want to be able to have it sent to my home, collected from you in your, one of your stores. I want to not even leave my car in some click and collect. So it's this whole shopper-centric in the true sense of the word. Whatever the shopper wants, the shopper can have in the ether or in a physical store.
The old buzzword was omni-channel retail. That was sort of like the holy grail. Has this actually appeared now?
Yeah, I think it's the whole omni-channel. Now it's just retail. And I think that's what's brought it together. Some great writings. I always refer to Howard Saunders and follow the guy. His views on what's happened with retail. He did a beautiful blog all around what physical retail owes to online retail and how it should be thanking online retail for what it's brought and injected into physical retail. Paco Underhill's just run a beautiful book about consumption of food and how we eat and why we eat and why food is important and how we get that, again, online and physical. So physical because we're buying it for home, or physical because we're consuming it out of home, or online because we're having it delivered to our homes. So there's a lot of really good thought being expressed and being shared around the world on where we find ourselves now.
Before we dive in too far into sort of general stuff, what's happened to you specifically over the last 2 years as far as the businesses you've been working with? What have you seen in your own personal experiences?
When you ask that question straight away, I think about 10 companies. 10 companies that I'm involved in some shape or form. I'm either working alongside the CEO, managing director, general manager, or I'm a shareholder in the business, or I'm a director of the company, or all three in some cases. And what I've seen is that those who are still standing today and still standing, so some of them went through a tough time, those who are still standing today are in great shape because they have been able to understand much overused words. We've heard pivot. They've been able to pivot their businesses. Some of them haven't pivoted. They've just accelerated because shoppers are accepting of what they did and more shoppers have come to join them, or their existing shoppers have are buying more from them. There's a great story, I won't share the company, but there's a great meeting that took place in the US with a major physical retailer. And they said, you know, inside your business, in this particular category, your shoppers who come to your stores buy $32 billion worth of this category, just not from you. And the CEO went, what? Yeah. Just not from you. So how do we help you? They're buying it and they come into your stores and they shop on your line, but they're not buying it from you. So how do we help you do that? So these are the things where you can open your mind. I mean, to access a category back in the day, you had to stock and build extra space and whatever. Now we're shrinking space. So all of the businesses have done well. They've improved. The cost base has changed significantly. It's got more expensive to employ people. It's got more expensive to freight things, no matter what part of the supply chain you're in. Prices have gone up. And they're not going back, they're not going down. Somebody asked me the other day, hey, do you think prices are going to go down? They import from Indonesia and India and China. And I said, no. Nobody's giving back price. Whoa, it takes us so long to get price. We're not going to give it away, not give it back. One of my children-in-law bought a Hyundai. They ordered it in early 21, and they got delivery of it in late 21. And the time they ordered it to the time the new one appeared on the lot went up from $60,000 to $80,000. That's a 25% increase. Now, Hyundai aren't giving that money back. Nobody's giving that money back. Not in airlines, not in hotels. Cost of hotels have gone up. Everything's gone up. And that's why we'll see price inflation. That's why we're seeing all of the central banks around the world saying clearly, you know, we're no longer allowing money to flow as easy as it did. And that's all coming back. And that's a bigger picture, Nigel, which kind of takes me onto the thing we talked about retail assets, physical assets, real estate. And we might touch on that a little bit later, but some phenomenal big picture seismic changes taking place around the world because of this change in retail and online. I get excited. My arms are waving. You can't see me, listeners. My arms are waving. I love this stuff.
Kevin's arms are waving so much, he's got a fan on his ceiling, and I'm a bit worried he's going to actually touch it at some point.
I'm in a Queensland summer. It's beautiful. It's 100 degrees outside there and 92% humidity.
Yeah, I'm in a New South Wales summer, and today we've got rain, but it's lovely because it's cooled down at last. Okay, so how well have some of your businesses done compared to what you would have been projecting pre-COVID?
I guess the key ones, if we start at the largest scale in terms of reach and brand, the Toys R Us business in Australia and New Zealand has gone from strength to strength. The investment in robotics in our warehousing has changed everything. Our ability to market more widely, to tap into a database of it's now 1.2, 1.3 million shoppers. And this is all public company. It's all.
Well, that's one of the big changes. It became a public company in the period.
Yes, to get access to capital, do the things it needed to do. And having done that and proven the model that you can take a physical brand with phenomenal goodwill across every part of the stakeholder base. So when you take a brand that suppliers love, shoppers love, employees love, everybody loves it, never did a bad thing to anybody, and you bring it back again in a different form, the support you get is unbelievable. Support from suppliers has been amazing. Support from employees, 400, 500, 600 people want to rejoin the company because they had a great time, a great career. It's a beautiful brand. So we proved the model, access to capital. You're able to do the things that you need to do. We've proved the model, and the business continues to grow very fast. And on the back of that, because we've been a test case for Toys R Us Kids and WHP in the US, we pitched for and won the UK license. So we're now Toys R Us Australia, New Zealand and UK. The reaction in the UK has been just unbelievable. I mean, we knew it was going to be good. We did no PR, no media, and the spontaneous reaction, it ran in media, every form of media. It ran in old-fashioned print media, online media. It ran in categories. It ran in everything. And it from the national newspapers, so the Daily Mail, the Sun, the Independent, but then in regional press, the Nottingham Post, just amazing, the response. So it's really resonating because people love the brand. I mean, spontaneously, 25,000 people have signed up to be subscribers. So that's been a real win. How to understand and the belief, I mean, at all stakeholders, for the brand owners to trust a management team to take a brand and to bring it back to life. So the brand had been removed from both those markets. It didn't exist in the UK and it didn't exist in Australia and New Zealand. To allow a management team to share their vision, to buy into their vision and say, yeah, we believe you can do this, to bring it back as a digital first. So lead with online and then develop some of the most beautiful experiential stores, which again, we'll talk about more and more what's happening around the world with experiential, the investment in very, very high, fewer, but very, very high quality retail outlets, which are, you know, you just want to hang in them. You just want to be in them. And you shop, you always shop, but you want to be in them.
I'm intrigued. So I'm looking forward to learning more about that.
The events business in Singapore. So again, when we talked about that, it looked like it was going under. It didn't. Again, it pivoted. The CEO, Andrew MacArthur Edwards, and his team did an incredible job with that. It now runs some of the, I would humbly suggest, some of the best event software in Asia. I don't think there's anybody close to the event software and how good it is. It's running events across 27 countries at a time. It's got some incredible clients. It used to win a client a month. It's winning, you know, 8 clients a month. And they're big players. They understand that they need reach in Asia, you know, multiple languages. That business and that team have done an amazing job.
It was a physical event business that's now pivoted to offer events through online software.
Yeah, so it built its own software, but actually we bought the development company. They worked with us and then it was going so well. We bought the development company and they're now part of our team. So we now run hybrid events. We've got some, when people like Marriott, who run, I think it's 4,500 hotels and venues across Asia, and when they say, I get what you're about, and then they want the software, and they actually say to all their event companies, we'd like you to use this, because what they can do is they can bring alive this whole hybrid thing. So, you know, physical events, online events, they're events. So I think that's the thing that we're seeing. No matter how you use that term, it isn't just there's the old way of doing it and the online. It's now just what it was. It's just that the online has allowed people to deliver it in ways that they never could. But when they turn around to all their suppliers and say, guys, please use this, because what we want to do is we want 2,000 people in an event at Marriott hotels across the whole of Asia. And what we want to do is to have 1,000 of those people physically in our events, eating in our venues, eating the same food, seeing the same event. The other 1,000 may be in their offices or at homes, but we can create an event with exactly the same feel across our venues across Asia. So that, again, people are opening their minds to do things in different ways. We're seeing the same thing with all the tech companies. They're doing a great job of harnessing it. So that's a great one. Online, Telecont Wines, brilliant what they've done. They've just improved where they've been with their businesses. Digital Mavens is doing well. So there's a lot of good stuff going on.
Just going back to Tullock for a second. I mean, that's a business that basically would have relied on Cellar Door for a vast percentage of their retail previously. How does a relatively small business push online into what's already a fairly crowded market and make a difference?
Well, Christina Tullock, who leads that business and had the team around her, embraced digital way before COVID, way before the pandemic. They understood that it was important that they had a physical, single physical location and they had to reach people in their homes. So you worked with Christina, you saw the quality of the work that was done. And having the destination, which won Cellar Door, I think 3 or 4 years in the Hunter Valley, which is a big deal. There's some incredible investment in those Cellar Doors in each of the valleys around the world, the wine valleys around the world. But what happened is you create this amazing place. You take into people's homes. They can see how amazing the wineries. They can see you picking grapes at certain times of the year. You can see them budding and flowering. You can be inside the venue. So they were ideally prepared for people to say, you know, I want to continue my relationship with you. I'm going to buy more of my wine from you. I can't go physically to a store. So whereas I'd buy 6 bottles from your 12, I'm now going to buy 18 or 24.
So do you do that by just ramping up your digital marketing, as in send out more newsletters?
I think it's subtler than that. I think the same thing we've seen with Toys R Us and Babies R Us. What you do is you retain that relationship and you share more thoughtful content that people go, yeah, you've caught my attention, you know, awareness and engagement. If it is that good, people just want to be interested. They want to be there. We haven't touched on, which we're going to touch on at some point, we're going to touch on the whole of the streaming in retail, which is just going off in China. It's going off around the world. But I'm running all over the place because there's a lot's happened now since we last recorded the podcast.
Yeah. Actually, I've been doing some work with a fashion business here in Sydney called Carolina. She's a lovely lady.
Oh, yes, I know. Yes.
Basically Colombian, brings in a lot of products that are made in her factories in Colombia, etc. Great quality. But she uses, to amazing effect, influencers. Mm. The difference that's made to her business is huge as well. It is bizarre that people are obviously online more. They're watching stuff everywhere, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And then if they find something they're into, they go for it.
But also they find somebody they trust. If you trust the brand, seeing that with Toys R Us and Babies R Us, you trust the brand or you trust the person. And if the person says, yeah, actually, I rate this, it works, that's a key part of it. The other thing that we've seen, and we've talked about this before, it's all broadcast media now. There are 10 million television channels. 10 years ago, there were a few, but 10 million. There aren't, but anybody can broadcast. We're broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say, as a producer, a video producer of many years, I'm quite intrigued by how successful some of these people are in growing businesses. I've, for my sins, during COVID, got into golf. There's this guy in the UK whose golf channel I absolutely love, a guy called Rick Shields, and he's got just gone over 2 million subscribers. And it's just a guy being authentic and genuine about clubs, about how he plays and helping you improve your shots. And I look forward to watching the videos.
And we've seen that everywhere, the ability to reach out. I did a review. So Finding Cadence, when we first started, it released its first single on one of our first podcasts. It's now done 15. And I've done a review of the guys who are on DistroKid and looking at all the distribution channels. And we're up to 300 different streaming channels around the world. And you look at people listening in Ireland and in Germany and in Spain, and it's crazy. And there's just three blokes on the Gold Coast with some instruments and an old mixing desk. So it has changed everything. To be able to distribute content and have a wide enough audience, a global audience that is truly interested. And when we say that, remember the big chunks of the market that are still tough to get to because of the great firewall of China and because of the markets that just block you out. But there's so much appetite for content. And I think in your role, Nigel, you never dreamed of being able to publish to the world. And that's what we do now.
I'll give a quick example. So when I first started in production back in London many years ago, to make a video, we'd have the producer, the director, the camera operator, the camera assistant, and the sound person as a bare minimum on site. And then the editing was a really laborious thing of, linear editing. So every change took, days, basically. And then you go into the online edit and spend hundreds of pounds an hour, have an editor, an edit assistant, millions of pounds worth of gear. And then a couple of years ago, I was called at about 8 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, can you come into, our head office? We need a video made and it's got to be in Switzerland by tonight. And by the evening, I'd sent a video with full effects, graphics, everything, which I'd shot in the morning, turned around and distributed to Switzerland. And I thought, well, A, that's why we're a lot cheaper now than we used to be, but B, crikey.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's the ability to be able to do the functionality of it and high quality. I mean, I sit in front of you, we're on Zencaster, I've got a state-of-the-art Rode microphone and headphones and YouTube, you've got a mixing desk in front of you, and it's not crazy money. Not crazy money.
No, indeed. And that's the point. I think the barriers to entry of a lot of industries have just vanished.
But I would like to humbly suggest that as with online retail right from the get-go, and as with anything as we get into the retail streaming, quality matters. So you and I did our original Udemy courses now 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, we shot the first one, 2014. And we said from the get-go, it would be shot in high quality video, high quality audio. It was all about quality. And Udemy said to us when we first ran it, they reached out to you and said, this is beautiful work. It still stands the time. Udemy Business is selling this to VW and to event companies and to hundreds of companies in America because the quality matters. So yes, you can buy the equipment to do things more cheaply, more cost effectively, and you can distribute unbelievably because of our distribution networks, but the quality still matters. And if you don't do the quality, you don't cut through.
Okay, so crystal ball time. Looking ahead, we've gone through a lot of change. What's coming up? How is the retail industry morphing with time?
So I think it's happened already. So if we look at different parts of the world, we're seeing the retailers that remain are investing in very, very high quality digital assets to be able to provide amazing online experiences. And it's just getting better and better and better. It's now not something that was in the, we've got to do this thing, it's in the back. It's now their lead guys and girls are doing phenomenal jobs of keeping their brands front and center. they can show more products and sell more products than they ever possibly could physically, which they're doing. That brings with its own, you know, amazing benefits and huge curses.
Give me an example. What are we talking here?
So a department store would previously have held, you know, 30, 40,000 SKUs. They can have 100,000 SKUs. They can have 150,000 SKUs. Some of those SKUs, stock keeping units, some of those items that they sell will never even touch their warehouses. They will go direct from their suppliers to our homes or to the store for click and collect. So it's given the retailers the ability to all be category killers. They've all got the ability to sell a much wider range of product than they ever did. And the marketplace has taught us that. The marketplace has taught us that we didn't actually have to have the product in our own warehouses. So physical retailers are doing that. So they're going into the space that the marketplace has had, and they're doing it quite cost effectively.
Does that make brands more important than ever before?
I believe it does. I talked about goodwill and I talked about quality. And when you do one thing really well for a long period of time, people trust your quality. How you harness that, how you deliver that cost effective, that's a business issue. But if you have that brand, I think you're able to do things other people can't do. If you've come in and your positioning has just been on price forever, price is a tough thing to hold on to. But you can't always be the lowest price. Somewhere along the way, something's being crimped or something's being shortchanged. It's hard to do just price. You have to have experience and range. And I think any of the major retailers who are in a category are now much, much better to compete today, ironically, than they were at the beginning of COVID with the marketplaces, with the Amazons and with the eBays and with the Alibabas. They're much better equipped to do it because they can have a wider range of product shipped at as good a price as some of the marketplaces. Remember, marketplaces for individuals are not cheap places to operate. We talked about this. 16, 20, 22% cost of doing business if you're an eBay or Amazon reseller. So if you're a physical retailer with your own setup and you harness your supplier base and say, guys, look, 10% of your SKUs, I don't want to touch. I want them on my site, but will you ship them, please? And I'll ship you boxes so that we have a good shopper experience when it reaches people's homes. So it's all branded. So I think they're in much, much better position, a much better position. And the brand is important. The brand is important. COVID's taught us how important the brand is. And I think the second thing they've done is they're investing in truly beautiful retail. I mean, some of the numbers I'm hearing that Hermes and Louis Vuitton and Tiffany are putting into some of their stores. So they've gone from having 10 stores in a capital city down to 3, but boy, those 3 are just beautiful stores. I mean, they're breathtaking stores. And when you go in there, you don't have to have it there. It can be delivered to you. They are places that you want to go. We've seen the same thing with Toys R Us, the Alpha Tame store in Dubai, unbelievable. We've just seen the store open in New Jersey, beautiful. So the stores are so good, people want to be there. So Toys R Us just opened their first physical store in the US for several years. It's in a mall called the American Dream Mall in New Jersey. The American Dream Mall is a beautiful mall. It's how retail's going, and I'll come back to this. So about 55% of the retail space in there is experiential. There are things going on. There are ice skating rinks. There are water parks. There are entertainment venues, and only 45% is physical retail. Anyway, the store was open. The first opening took place, which is a media opening, and the media went, this is great, and people turned up. They then said, this is going so well, we'll have a second opening. So the second opening and more local shoppers came. They said, this is going so well, we'll do a third opening. Third opening came, and at the third opening, a lot more shoppers turned up. It's trading really well. So the shoppers turned up, and there's a lovely young girl in the lineup to get into the store. And the guy who leads Toys R Us in the US, Yehuda Schmidman, said, hey, look, can we just come and video you and talk to you while you're here? The little girl came over and they interviewed her. Anyway, mum came over and started to chat with Yehuda. Went, oh, I hope we haven't done anything wrong. She said, no, this is fantastic. Being able to come here is amazing. And Yehuda said, look, I live in New Jersey, New York. Which part of the state are you from? And she said, we're not from New Jersey. We're from Florida. We have flown the family from Florida to be at this store opening. That's the power of really good experiential retail. And that's what we're going to be seeing more and more of. Now, we can shop online for those brands, but being part of it, that's the key thing. And we're seeing that again around the world, these investments in beautiful stores that people say, I want to go and see that. I remember that. It's not gone. It's great that retail has this chance to come again.
And I guess it's sort of almost obvious, because if we've got the hang of just shopping with a couple of clicks to actually get us to get off our bums and go heading off somewhere, there's got to be a really good motivation to do it now.
Absolutely. And it's got to be an experience. I want it to be a great experience. I want it to be something I remember. We talked about Bass Pro. When the first of those stores opened, I can go in, I can fish, I can shoot guns, I can use a boat, I can go onto a lake and use a ski boat. That's super experiential. And that's what we're seeing more and more. People want to be involved in that.
Sorry, but that's big business, surely. there's a barrier to entry to be able to do that.
No, no. So during COVID, people have gone outdoors to shop around the world. Organic markets have gone off. I was at a place called Bellingen, which is in the middle of, it's not in the middle of, it's in northern New South Wales. It's a little tiny town. It's funky. It's laid back. It's got beautiful alternative people. And the organic market there is out in the open, in the showgrounds, mixed among gum trees and streams. I'm serious. I mean, what better experiential? You go there, there's a big football oval as part of it, but there's a stream running through it. You shop amongst the trees. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, a car park somewhere. And anyway, they've continued to trade. So the small retailers have understood that. They want to be there because people want to go there. It's outdoors. It feels safer. It feels good. People are doing that. So I think as an independent retailer, as you're looking to revamp your stores and look at your lease locations, if you can't make them something truly experiential, and if your mall owner is not doing something to make that a truly amazing place, then you need to look around and change. If you can buy, which you can do at the moment, if you can buy freestanding retail that you can own, that you can make the destination, buy it. Buy it. Because right now, everybody's selling retail, nobody's buying it. Everybody's buying logistics and warehousing. So if you can do that and you're a business owner, do it now, do it well, and make it a destination, allow people to come. One other thing on the big end of town, because this is another thing that we've seen, it's going to happen more and more. I talked about when as a young man living above a pharmacy, a drugstore in an old town called Harrogate in the UK. And it was a truly beautiful place to live. Above the pharmacy, the chemist, the drugstore, was a two-story, huge high ceilings staircase up through the middle of it. And that's where the pharmacist and his family used to live in those days. And so live above the shop retail. In Asia, specifically Japan, we saw it in Hong Kong. Live above retail has always been necessary because that's the way you live. In most of the places where we have land, so certainly North America, nobody lived above retail. We built strip malls and big shopping malls out of town, and people didn't live above them. What we're seeing now is those sites, the value of them is not the retail below. I talk about the American dream. When 45% of your stores are physical retail, everything else has to be different. What we're seeing is those malls being either knocked down completely or people are buying them back quite cheaply, and they're starting to put residential above them. So there's a big shopping mall in Queensland, in the Gold Coast. So destination, it's called Pacific Fair. It's a beautiful mall, one of the best in the country. And the owner, the part owner, has just bought back the rest of the equity in it. And I believe what they're going to do is they're going to put up towers above it. And we'll have genuine, beautiful, live above the shop. And it is a world-class mall. I mean, it's got Hermes, it's got Tiffany, it's got beautiful stores. We will have that more and more. So those sites that have been shopping malls with nothing above them, that space is going to have value again. And we're going to build above it. We're going to sit all around the Western world.
Yeah, and that's interesting because obviously if you're a food provider, then you've got a ready market straight above you. Whereas if you're out of town somewhere and people got to come and find you, then that's not going to work so well. It changes the mix, basically.
It completely does, yeah. This concept of people driving to go shopping, it's got to be an experience. It's got to be amazing. And we haven't got people back on roads yet. So when you do have people back on roads again, it's not a heap of fun. So if you live above a world-class mall, what a great place to be.
So 2 years ago, it's fair to say that retail was looking like a industry that was going to be decimated by changes.
Hollowed out,
yeah. So what you're saying, it's basically having a facelift and looks pretty buoyant going forward. Is that right?
No, it's been hollowed out. So in the 24 months, the amount of retail space has shrunk. Department stores have left standing, have not opened new department stores. They've closed many. They've given up a lot of lease space they had. They've subleased it or they've said the landlords, I don't want it. So when we go to department store now, it's much smaller. The best of them now have fewer stores, less space in those stores, and their sales revenue has grown by a percent or two. That's great. That's an amazing thing to have achieved. So it has been hollowed out. If you go to the high streets and you go to the second and third tier strip malls, they're sad. There's nothing in them. They're just hollowed out. Those who've survived are in better malls, better locations, creating better footfall, but not to be confused, they have been hollowed out.
Right. And so if you're in a high street that's, you know, now got 32 charity shops because...
There it is. 32 charity shops and not a lot else. We don't pay taxes and you don't pay anything for your products.
Pretty too big a question, but how would you revive a high street? Is anyone doing that well that you've seen?
when I think of the most vibrant spaces, town spaces in the world, they're all in very old places. They're in Matrasouk in Muscat, Oman. They're within the walls of Lucca in Italy. They're in Deir ez-Zor in Dubai. They're the old places that people want to be. The laneways of Melbourne are still vibrant, but it's retelling of lots of things, but not things. It's a lot of food. It's a lot of entertainment. I think that's very hard to replicate in high streets that have lots of cars flowing through them. I mean, you can't get a car. Well, you can get cars through the streets of Lucca, but a mate of mine lives in Lucca, has a Range Rover inside the walls of Lucca. I'll tell you what, that's hard when you've got 2 inches either side of the vehicle. We see it in Las Vegas, in some of the malls, the enclosed malls in Vegas, because they're enclosed spaces and they're vibrant. But it's hard to do in a high street of a town where there's cars and buses and trucks and things moving through. It's really hard to do.
Yeah, it's funny because I grew up in a village in England called Cranley. We actually used to claim to be the biggest village in England, but I think that's all up for debate. But they had a beautiful department store, not huge, but David Mann's, and it'd been open for 175 years and it shut this year. And I'm on this school Facebook page and the sadness from everyone on there is amazing, but it's still shut because obviously not enough people shopped in it. The other thing with the village, growing up, there was this amazing, amazing baker called Hibbs and an amazing, amazing butcher called Collins. And they did these sausages that the queue would go down the high street. Saturday morning at the baker, the queue would go down the high street. They're not there, but why can't a business like that survive?
Well, they can. And as you're talking now, I'm busy flicking through my photographs. And I met a phenomenal young man in a 110-year-old department store out in regional Queensland. And I said to him, because I was shopping there and I saw this stuff, and I said, are you online? He said, I took the business online. He's an employee. I took the business online 8 weeks ago. I said, show me. Shopify? He said, yeah, Shopify. So we jumped on my phone and we started shopping. And I said, how's it going? He said, we're blown away. So it can be done. This is regional Queensland, 110, 120-year-old store. And then I walked around. I said, are you involved in the family? He said, no, that old lady over there, she's one of the third generation. She's an owner. And I walked over and said, hello, I've just been talking to that nice young man. She goes, yes. I said, no, he's taking you online. She says, he has. I don't know what he's doing. Not a clue, but it's going well. So it can be done. He took it upon himself in a small town in regional Queensland in Australia to do it. Good on him. It's doable. It's all doable.
Yeah. Okay. So basically it's going to take more imagination and more creativity and probably more artisan qualities.
Yeah, but it's reach. So one of the questions that we used to ask of a mall is, you know, what's its local market area? How many people and what's the spend? And they'd say, oh, well, we've got a million people and they spend, you know, 3 billion. Well, I don't know what it is. But it doesn't matter anymore, really. What matters is that you can, as we're doing, you can publish to the world and you can sell product to the world and have a physical location.
So what we're seeing here is there's a lot of change going on, but surely it's not easy to make some of these changes. Does government come into this? Does zoning come into this? What has to change to make retail even more vibrant?
Again, we've learnt that government has also understood that it's all online now. So when we talk about a service, we have service centres that the government own that nobody wants to go to. Again, there's no desire to stand in a long queue when you don't need to. So government services are being delivered in a way they haven't been ever delivered before, and they're being delivered online. But when it comes to the physical changes taking place, so we're seeing changes in how contractors are dealt with around the world. So government's role at the different levels it's involved in, it's got a federal, national government who are defining labour rates and defining how people work. And then down at the state or a regional level, we've got people defining where we're going to put infrastructure, how we're going to develop towns. And then down at local area, we've got local government saying, and this is what you can and can't develop. And each level of government, where you've got two or three levels of government, needs to be aligned to understand that these things have to change. Otherwise, as you describe, what we have is we have empty spaces in old high streets that nobody wants, or we have these terrible derelict strip malls and derelict physical malls, enclosed malls that nobody wants. So for people to be able to redevelop those and make them vibrant places, which is a mix of entertainment and maybe logistics is in there and people living above them and they're creating this, they need the help of government. So government has to say, yeah, I'm good with this. I do understand that if I don't assist you, if I don't help you develop, if I don't allow you to go above and build above the airspace on shopping malls, my community, my local government area, my voting community will not get the best from this. And I think that's an important part of it. Money gets it. I mean, money's flowing into those places and they're looking at the returns and looking at how it's playing out, and money gets it. So we'll see that more and more.
One of the other big changes, of course, has been distribution.
So in physical retail, there's the requirement to get product out of factories into one's own warehouses and then into one's stores. And that's been fraught with difficulties. If you're online, there's a requirement to get them out of factories into your warehouses and then into people's homes. And that's been fraught with difficulties. I think if you look at a global scale, there is no impetus, there's no desire by the largest parts of the logistics industry worldwide to put more capacity into logistics. If you're in the shipping industry, it takes a long time to commission a ship, and currently nobody wants to do it. We had massive overcapacity. We lost a few shipping lines. A whole load of ships were mothballed and they're not coming back in a hurry. So that pricing isn't going to go away. Ironically, there's this whole concept of the Silk Road. So China's Silk Road, the ability to ship from China specifically to Europe, but also into North America, has been visionary. And it's something that people were unable to achieve on a government level, because in the Western world, you tend not to get the alignment. The Americans can put people on the moon and they can send people to space because everybody gets behind the president. But when it comes to commerce, you're on your own, and the Americans create a free playing field for the best and brightest and most innovative people to create amazing companies, which they do, amazing industries, which they do, but they don't get involved in creating the infrastructure. So when you can put items out of a factory, a train siding, into your factory in China, and that then runs, that box goes all the way to Europe, to Madrid, to Germany, to wherever it's going, on the Silk Road, on a train, a 13,000-mile-long train line, that's a game changer. So that doesn't just allow the big end of town to ship into markets. It allows individuals to be able to deliver to those markets cheaply. People don't care if it takes 21 days. They don't care if it takes 21 days. I know it's coming and the price is right. So I think these infrastructures, rail, intermodal transport, so where a truck meets a train, or an aeroplane meets a truck, or a ship meets a train or a truck, they're good things. And we'll see that more and more. Further down the line, you've seen the phenomenal boom in independent businesses running their own single Toyota Hiace, or their own single VW Transporter or a Mercedes Sprinter. So we've seen that huge last mile, last kilometer booming, and we've got everything happening in between. So logistics will play a huge part. We will see driverless as we go forward, even if it's just the night runs that we see for trucks. If you go to any country in the world and you look at the major cities, if you ever drive a freeway late at night, if you're in a car, you're the only car, and it's just red lights in front of you and white lights coming towards you as trucks are hauling things between cities. A lot of those can be driverless. So there's a lot of things coming that we're going to see.
Let's take this back to the small business. So if I'm thinking of starting as a retailer, I've got a great idea, or if I've been a little bit slow in my transitioning from just a fairly simple physical retailer, where should I be putting my energy, and what are the things I need to get absolutely right?
So it depends which way you're coming from. If you're coming starting a new business, 90%, I throw these numbers around, I don't know if they're right, it's a truism, it's indicative. 90% are starting online because they're able to say, I've curated it and I can get to more people this way, even if that's more people in my community. They're not on one high street, I can get to the whole of my community. My community might be a million people, half a million people in my town, rather than just the people who come to the part of town where I open a store. Once they've done that, then they can say, do I want to have a physical location? I've got to have, at some point, OB5. I talked to the guy who owns OB5 just before Christmas, bought another skateboard.
Broken any limbs this year?
Not yet, Nigel.
Okay.
I managed to damage a knee on a stand-up paddleboard on a lake about 2 weeks ago, but it's okay. And I said, how are you doing? He said, come out back. And I remember his first warehouse, now his second warehouse. I looked at him and went, whoa, you got 10 times more stock than I saw you with 24 months ago. He says, yeah, I got to move again. But we're seeing him saying, well, once I'm doing that, I also want a space for people to come and skateboard. I do want to be experiential. I do want there to be somewhere that I can bring it alive, not just the boxes. So he's moving in into physical. If you've got a physical location, as the department store in Central Queensland, you then say, okay, my move is towards the online. So how can I get more online? How can I liaise with my suppliers and say, look, I do want to buy double the number of SKUs I bought from you. And every supplier wants to hear that. Oh, a growth retailer, how good is that? Let me throw my arms around you. I want to buy double the number of SKUs, but I only want to stock half of them. I want you to ship them to my shoppers. Are you good with that? And find a way. So those are the things as small businesses. How can I do that? How can I take my physical store far more online? If I'm online, how can I have some form of physical presence that's relevant? Not just another shop. Not just another shop. It's got to have relevance.
But again, with online, still not a case of build it and they will come. You've got to promote, haven't you?
Yeah. So again, you talk about influencers. I believe the greatest influencer you can ever have is yourself. And look at Christina Tulloch. I mean, it took us a while to get Christina in front of the camera, and now she is brilliant. And she'll stand up at an event with 150, 200 people, and she just holds the stage beautifully. It took her a while. Once she got into it and she'd been coached and she was confident and she saw herself from behind the camera as well as in front of the camera, it changed everything. I think that the best thing can be is that person who says, this is what I'm curating. So you love what I buy because you've seen it. Now understand me and my motivations and what brings me alive. So that's what we've seen with a lot of the streaming. So I go back to the Silk Road, and where we see Chinese government assisting small business owners, startups, with their streaming to allow them to stream and sell online in real time so that people can see it. I mean, we've had Shop TV forever, you know, forever. And I can buy online, and this is now, again, 10 million Shop TV channels. So we can now do that. So I think if you do that, get on board, you know, get comfortable with that little circle light in front of you with your microphone and accept the fact that you're going to be broadcasting. Get coached, make sure it's the best you can be. But I think that's the best thing you can do. There's a beautiful business here in Australia called Three Birds. And Three Birds set up teaching predominantly women how to renovate and how to renovate, not interior design, because it went beyond that. And they now sell courses online. Beautifully done. And the guys who started that, it's a very successful business, 30, 40 employees now, but their digital reach is amazing and the quality of what they do is amazing. And they feature in all of that. They are the stars of the show, and the knowledge in those courses, $600 a pop, are bought by a lot of women to be able to assist them in renovating properties. So they're at the front of it. They're comfortable that that's where they need to be.
I guess we should be doing a little bit of promotion of our own here, which is that if you want to tap into Kevin's expertise, we do have the Road to Online Retail website where you can see all the courses we offer.
Absolutely, you can. And I've got to say, Nigel, I've been blown away because we again did a review of the stats. The number of listeners in America and the UK, yeah, I guess Australia, New Zealand and Singapore, because, you know, that's our hood. But the number, the percentage of our listeners in the US and the UK really does surprise me. It blows me away. So if you're listening in the US and you're listening in the UK, thank you. It makes a big difference. And we're glad that what we say in our part of the world resonates with you in your part of the world.
Yeah, and if you could either subscribe or give us a like, that would be appreciated too. And if you want to see the website, go to theroadtoretail.com. Thank you for listening. Now, Kevin, music. Have you still been playing any music during?
Oh, yeah, absolutely we have. We're going to go out with our latest single, which is a song called Speed Freak. And Speed Freak is a song that's reminiscent of the 1960s in London. So people who ride motorcycles, which I do, and you do, Nigel, will know that in London there's an amazing place called Ace Cafe, and it's still around today, and people used to go there in the 60s and then ride off to Brighton. What they didn't know, there was also a place called the Cellar Cafe on the banks of the River Thames in Windsor, where the Queen lives. Who knew that the Queen allowed motorcyclists in her hometown? And my mate, who's the lead singer and the lyricist who writes all the songs, Bob, used to ride a Triumph from the Cellar Cafe down to Brighton. So this is a song that reminisces all about the days of riding fast and on little green lanes and through towns in England in the 1960s. It's called Speed Freak.
Okay, we're looking forward to it. Thank you for listening.
When we were young, riding fast bikes and having fun. Roaring down those country lanes, smiling faces and empty brains. No worries in the world, head to the coast. This is what we love the most. Trying to reach the magic tongue. Going fast, just part of the fun. Drinking coffee at the cellar cafe, planning a trip for the following day. Tuning our bikes to make them fast, hoping that they're gonna last. Speed freak, we're out there. Speed freak, we don't care. Speed freak, I wind the power on. Speed freak, now we're gone. Grab our bikes at the break of day, 5 a.m. and we're on our way. 10 or more we roar down the street, pissing off neighbors we meet. Taking girls along for the ride, speeding through the countryside. Sun on your back, riding like we're on the track. This is how we spend our days. Chrome steel gods ready to play. Smell of oil and polished paint, picking up girls that we can taint. Speed freak, 'cause we're out there. Speed freak, we don't care. Speed freak, I wind the power on. Speed freak, now we're gone. Find a pub and have a beer. Eat fish and chips and go to the pier. Those good old memories from the past. We might be old, but we love to go fast. No regrets from the days gone by. Next stop, riders in the sky. Speed freak. Speed freak. Speed freak. Speed freak. Now we're gone.